Tonight, we're going to focus on step 10. For those who might not know it, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. Two very important points. Constantly checking in, and then sometimes it's even harder, the admitting, right? So, by now, for those of you who are in a program, you probably know that just staying away from the addictive substance or behavior in and of itself is not promising a happy and fulfilling life in and of itself, but it's surely a beginning. And both the 12 steps and the Buddha's teachings, they address this sense of how to achieve or get to or open to some kind of ongoing personal sense of fulfillment, of okayness inside, some kind of peace inside. So the word continued is key here, really important. In one of the self-help books, it says, repetition is the only form of permanence that nature can achieve. Repetition is the only form of permanence that nature can achieve. So once we have dealt with the past, we need to maintain this noble path. We need to maintain what we've gained by means of a daily review of our actions. And that, for me, is both positive and negative. I think very often we tend to look too closely at what went wrong and not enough at, like, oh, what did I do right today? What was good about today? Because when we can really enjoy the aspects of happiness that come from acting in a way that's ethical and kind, it gives us even more of a sense of wanting to repeat it, because it does feel good. And Nancy and I were talking about that. We had supper earlier. And in truth, every moment is a beginning. Every moment is a beginning. And even as we are in the midst of a thought or in the midst of doing something, we have the capability, if we're mindful enough, of being able to witness it. And if we witness it, if need be, we can change midstream if we think we're moving in a direction that doesn't serve us or others. So, I mean, have you ever had the sense of, like, just about starting to blurt out something, and then you go, oh, no, everything's fine, actually, right now. And that is so positive, you know, when we can do it. So, although step 10 is taken after a lot of work, a lot of inner work and exploration, this being mindful of the effects of our actions, when we talk about actions, we're talking about mental, physical, and verbal. So the Buddha's always talking about verbal, physical, mental. So even as we first come into program, although we're not doing step 10, we can start to take a look at what we're doing, even if we're the tiniest bit awake, the tiniest bit of being sober or abstinent. We do start to see a little more clearly. Not necessarily how it is after step 9. So we have this capacity. We have this capacity to see what's going on. But it takes training. It takes training, like ice skating. Now that I say it, when you think of how many times you feel like you're on thin ice as you're in a relationship or something like that, it's good to take note of that. These negative habits that we have are very deeply entrenched from our backgrounds, from our culture, just from the sheer repetition, right, of learning how to defend ourselves, and some more than others. And the other piece is we get enchanted by our stories. Have you noticed that? You go into fairy tale land and you just believe all the crap that your brain, that your mind is saying. So sometimes, much of the time, We cannot see the cause and effect of our actions and words. We're just not aware. I think sometimes we don't realize how strong we are in terms of relation to others, that what we say, think, or do actually impacts on other people. And they are going to respond one way or another. And once we see how we've started something in motion, or have started to shut down something that was in motion, life becomes much more thrilling. So meditation or meditative attention is an art that is an acquired skill, and it brings clarity and it brings intelligence, you know, ability to see things. So when we sit in meditation for a half hour, 20 minutes, 2 hours, 7 weeks, whatever, even though the mind wanders, that's really seeing, gosh, look at that. You know, and so we learn to keep bringing it back. And in the meditation that Nancy so beautifully led tonight, if your mind was wandering all over the place and you brought it back even once, that's training the muscle. And there are a variety of techniques and all the different forms of Buddhist meditation. The art of attention is a common thread in all the different schools. So there's a wonderful little Zen story I'll just read about the ubiquitousness of meditation. So a monk once asked his teacher, "What is the fundamental teaching in Buddhism?" And the master replied, "Attention." So the student wasn't satisfied with the answer, and he said, no, I wasn't asking about attention, but I'm wanting to know the essential teaching in Buddhism. And the master replied, "Attention, attention, attention." Significant. Paying attention. Now, we are accustomed most of the time paying attention when we cross the street because our lives may be in danger. And indeed, somebody in my apartment house was sadly run down by a truck that was not paying attention. A little old lady with a cane. So we do our own act of generosity by paying attention so accidents don't happen to other people because of us. Anyway, attention, attention. And we need to continuously investigate and recognize how we still make mistakes. And we're not using words like bad. We're looking to see what's skillful, what's not skillful, you know, where something was a mistake. How do we hurt ourselves? And there are so many ways we hurt ourselves. And I think for a lot of us, we get so used to hurting ourselves, we're not even aware we're doing it. And also very often we'll blame somebody else, you know, and we hurt others. If we don't pay attention, if we're not really careful as we move in this direction, the addiction is looming behind us like a hungry wolf. Doesn't matter how long, if we're not somehow opening to the truth, the clarity of life as it is, when we're not looking, it can happen. It can happen. So what does it mean to take inventory? Well, if you were a store, you would know what it means. You would, what are you running out of? What do more people want? You'd want to have more of that. What do you have too much of? Right? What's the good stuff that people want? You'd be checking it all out, right? So there are many guidelines both in the big book, in the 12 steps, and in the Buddha's teachings and suttas to guide us. And so tonight, I'm just going to look at it, you know, from the point of view of the Buddha's teachings. And overall, the Buddha said, wisdom starts with asking the question. So here's the question. And if you don't do anything else, take the question. What, when I do, will lead to my long-term welfare and happiness, and to the happiness of others? So the flip side of it is, what do I do that doesn't? Just asking that question. And, you know, if you keep that in your mind as you go through the day, Just like, is this helpful? Is this kind? Just even that question, like, plopped in. He goes, oh. It's like adding a little bit of honey to your tea, something like that. So in a sutta, I'm not going to read you the whole sutta, because the suttas, the whole teaching of the Buddha was an oral tradition. So in the writings that have been passed down, there's a lot of repetition because that's how people would remember. So they would say the same thing over and over and over again in different categories, and that's how it came. So the Buddha is teaching his son Rahula, and he asks Rahula a really important question, and it's one that we can also ask ourselves. And he says, Rahula, what is a mirror for? And Rahula says, for reflection, sir. And so then the Buddha starts, in the same way, Rahula, bodily actions, verbal actions, mental actions are to be done with repeated reflection. Interesting. We use the word mirror for so many things, very often having to do with vanity and outward appearance. You know, we look in the mirror, but now we're talking about an inner appearance, so to speak. So what would it be like if during the course of the day somebody held a mirror up so you could see the inner reflection of what you were doing? It's an interesting question to just play with. Just play with. So here's a part of what the Buddha said to Rahula, and it's sort of an ongoing tenth step. Whenever you want to do a bodily action or a verbal action or a mental action, so this time I'll just say action and it'll be for all three, all right? You should reflect on it. This action I want to do, would it lead to self-affliction, to the affliction of others, or to both? Would it be unskillful, with painful consequences, with painful results? If on reflection that you know it would lead to self-affliction, to the affliction to others, or to both, it would be an unskillful action with painful consequences, painful results, then any action of that sort is absolutely unfit for you to do. I think Rahula was around 10 at the time. Good training, huh? But he went on. He said, but if on reflection you know that it would not cause affliction, on and on and on, it would be a skillful action with pleasant consequences, pleasant results, then any action of that sort is fit for you to do. And he then says, and this is what I love about it, it's not black or white, right or wrong. If you don't get it right, you get hit and sent to your room. No, this is so cool. And it's something I think it's important for us to remember. He says, not only when you want to do an action, but while you are doing an action. If all, like I said before, you just see, you're almost in the process, you know. And then he adds, similar to the 10th step, having done an action, this is at night, for example, we might do it. The Buddha says, having done an action, you should reflect on it in the same way. So you're like looking back over the day. If on reflection that you know, I'm repeating it because I think it's so important to actually get it. So if you don't hear me the first time, maybe the eighth time. Anyway, if on reflection you know that it led to, now it's saying you know that it led to self-affliction. Because sometimes you don't know until looking back and you go, hey, that was a mistake, you know. If you know that it led to self-affliction, to the affliction of others, or both, and that it was an unskillful action with painful consequences, painful results, then you should confess it, reveal it, lay it open to the teacher or to a knowledgeable companion in the holy life. Now, certainly for us in program, I know a lot of people take a 10th step and read it to their sponsors. And some people take a 10th step and read it to yourselves. Fine. You can be your own teacher as you're doing this. But then he went and he says, having confessed it, you should exercise restraint in the future. So if we don't pay attention to what we're doing and some of the karmic results of what we do, it's so easy to keep repeating it until it hits you in the head somehow or other, or what do they say, bites you in the tush, or however it works. And then the Buddha says, and here's I think is so important also, if on reflection, there's a great mirror here, if on reflection you know that it did not lead to affliction, it was a skillful action with pleasant consequences, pleasant results, then you should stay mentally refreshed and joyful, training day and night in skillful mental qualities. Yeah. So I don't know how many of you do this when you do your 10th step. If you do a 10th step, at the end of the day, you know, really just take some time to reflect on something lovely that you did. What it felt like. You go, oh yeah, that feels good. Maybe I want to do it again. That's how we learn. So you see that this practice of sila, and the word is ethics, morality, it's twofold. It's to resolve to do no harm, and we'll make mistakes along the way, that's for sure, and to restrain yourself when you know you're about to do something unwholesome. So those are two key words, resolve and restrain. And at the same time, have compassion and kindness for yourself when you trip all over your resolve and restraint. We're in the process of making a change. So it's helpful, actually important, to have some guidelines that help us stay aware and help us exercise this prudent restraint. And so, as I said before, the one that pervades all of our life is sati, is mindfulness. It's mindfulness, it's paying attention. So the more we develop our mindfulness, mindful of our intentions, mindful of our intentions. Two people can do the same thing, and one person is going to have a negative consequence and one person won't. The one who won't have negative because the intention maybe was to do good. The other, something malicious. So you watch your intentions. And more we're going to start to see the connection between our thoughts and our words and our actions and our relationships, and then we can start to make some wise choices. Very early on in program, a wise choice for me was get to a meeting, Sandra. That was the choice. And I knew that the more I did it, then the more I wanted to do it, and the more, you know, good I felt about it. Our choices get a little more complex as we go on. So I want to say a word about taking this kind of personal inventory in regard to ourselves. There are so many ways, my gosh, we're so creative, where we personally can injure ourselves. And one of the strongest is the way we talk to ourselves. And we're so used to hearing ourselves blaspheme. We're so used to hearing it that we don't even hear what we're doing. But if somebody else were to call you the names that you call yourself, I don't know, you will say, oh, thank you so much. I feel so much better that you really see who I am. You get, oh, this is good. I don't think so. So if somebody called you a piece of shit, how would you react? How do you react when you call yourself a piece of shit? And I'm using this piece of shit based on hundreds and hundreds of clients over the years, you know, who talk about, you have the same thing, right? Who talk about how they talk to themselves. But until there's a wake-up call, you know, and we don't even know what we don't when we do that, we don't even know what we're doing to our psyches, to our bodies and our hearts. And sometimes when I'll get down on myself for whatever reason, I can feel in a couple of hours my energy starts to go. But why wouldn't it start to go? Even if I do it in a more skillful way nowadays. And then when I realize what I'm doing, I go, oh my gosh. All right, honey, let's start again. And it takes a combination of courage and compassion. Courage to be willing to see, and compassion. Passion when we see it, like, oh, okay, all right. Then we can make more changes. So knowing one's faults is a good start, but we have to add to it, just what I'm saying, humility. Sometimes it can be very humbling, right? When you start to see what you've been doing. Honesty, patience to correct ourselves, patience to go through the process of the correcting. And as I said, courage and compassion. If I may say, earlier tonight, talking with Nancy, she talked about fearlessness. And yeah, fearlessness. So in the Buddhist tradition, there have been specific precepts that have been given as guidelines. And these are practices and they're not rules. So what I would like to do is I would like to say them, and then perhaps you all can say it after me, okay? I take the precept to live with non-harming. I take the precept. I take the precept to refrain from taking what is not offered. I take the precept to refrain from false speech.
I take the precept to refrain from false speech.
That one, by the way, whoa, that is so filled, because it also includes gossip, not just saying what's not true. And you might want to try someday, take about half a day, where you just make a pact with yourself not to talk about anybody else. If a half a day seems like too much, take an hour. It doesn't count if you're sitting in silence. Okay. I undertake the precept, the practice, to refrain from sexual misconduct. Sexual misconduct. And then I take the precept to refrain from substances or behaviors that cause heedlessness and non-awareness. I undertake the precept to refrain from substances that cause heedlessness and non-awareness. And at some point, if you can always go to Google and download these. And if you were to put them up somewhere where you can see them, and in the morning, just remind yourself, and in the evening, look at it again, or maybe take one of them and really practice with it on a given day. It's just an idea. So these precepts are powerful guidelines, if we follow them, for our behavior and for living in harmony with ourselves and with others. And, so often when we talk about living in harmony, we have a sense of living in community and living with other people. But there's a whole community right in this body. How to live in harmony with ourselves. And they give us the opportunity to make a conscious choice to refrain from behavior that makes more confusion and makes more difficulty. And the more we do it, it's so interesting, I just sat up straight, we develop a more spiritual backbone. It's really helpful. And we develop a view, a point of view, that's more than just answering our own personal needs. Because we're taking other people into account. And what happens, we develop more so a realization of the interconnectedness of everything, including the earth. And we start to actually feel it. And it moves into a whole different way of being. We move out as a move out of this self-centered preoccupation. I, you know, in a way, you know, when I'm really paying attention and I'm present, that self-centered preoccupation is so boring. It's boring. It's so interesting how we can get so fascinated by it. I mean, anyway. And then we understand what the value of this harmonious action and just shifts the whole relationship. And we grow stronger in resolve and restraint. So at first glance, I suspect most of us would say, I agree living with these precepts, but there are increasing levels of subtlety in our everyday living. And you'll start to see it. And it will become actually fascinating if you take this on. So I think it'll be beneficial for you to work with this. And we'll, before the evening's over, we'll take them again. And we'll take them also in a, not just the thou shalt not form, but also thou shall. And so then we can work with that at the end of the evening.